6:12 in the morning, and it doesn't get a lot colder than this, thankfully. But when you think about the fact that we really only have 4 more weeks of winter, and let me get Paul Conrad in here. Paul, let me explain.
Yeah.
Here's 4 more weeks of winter.
Right, 3-4, something like that.
You got 2 weeks to the Super Bowl.
Right.
Right? Well, 3.
Right.
So 3 weeks to the Super Bowl.
2-3, somewhere in there.
And then a week after that, you got your pitchers and catchers going for spring training. And then winter's
summer's
over.
Summer's here.
So, you know, we're in pretty good shape overall.
Just fighting it out, yeah. It was mild all December.
Yeah. So we got to stop complaining.
Get out there. You know, I swim to work every day. A lot of people don't know that.
But, well, it's part of the reason you're in such incredible shape.
Yes, it is. Let me just say, it was a little icy out there in the Chicago River this morning.
It's also part of the reason you smell so funky getting in the river.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Now, this kind of weather will change people's disposition.
Yes, it will.
All right, so let's just go through the morning show staff at Channel 9.
Cranky.
Tim McGill.
I love that man.
Seems like a nice guy.
He is a nice guy, but on cold days like this, he is keying all the cars in the parking lot. Like he intentionally rams into the back end of my car.
Yeah.
And then he's got his keys out. He's just running it down the side of half the cars in the lot.
Changes your disposition.
Right. But I still love the guy.
What about Erin McElroy?
She's a drunkard is what I'm going to discover. She comes in all sauced up.
Yeah.
It's hard to get her to not use the cuss language on the old TV.
Yeah, because that's why every once in a while during the traffic, it'll be colorful adjectives on the candidate.
They've got her anchoring this morning also. Baumgartner must be on her bender again.
Speaking of Robin, what's she like when it's cold?
You know, that woman never says anything negative. You know? She has got this peaceful disposition about her.
Bright sunshine, sunny.
Right. She is a glass overflowing with optimism and joy
always,
the time, nonstop.
That's always been my impression.
Sometimes it's difficult to be next to her because she's so positive. And I'm, sometimes I feel a little negative.
What about, you got 12 or 13 Ponces over there.
Yeah.
What about the Ponces?
You know, I don't run into the Ponce as much as I used to.
Oh, is that right?
I don't know what's going on.
Out the door, is he, as soon as the show's over?
Maybe so. I don't know what's going on. I guess that is what happened.
Who am I missing?
Potash. You know, Larry Potash. He has different hair pieces that he wears depending on the cold. And he's got his 3A double thick on this morning.
Well, you also
on just above the ears.
His staff wraps him in silk blankets, and they carry him into work. Don't
they? And they surround him. What's nice is he lives up on the North Shore, so he's got all these people who stand out inside of his door with candles and hair dryers, so that he doesn't get cold from the door to the car.
Right.
They run with him around his car till he gets onto the expressway. It's fancy living up.
Is it true, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong about this, I'm hearing that Potash is being, he's insisting the rest of you call him L. Potash.
Oh, yeah.
And he's trying to get Sean Penn to interview him.
Yes, that is exactly right. Okay. He's also got a great collection of shirts that he's been showcasing also. So, yes, the old L. Potash.
Yeah. Yeah.
The guy's got an ego on him. Look out for him.
But do we cover everybody? Is that everybody on the show?
Yeah, we probably missed half a dozen people. You're Anna Bellaval.
Oh, Anna Bellaval, sure. Yeah,
she is a native of Iceland or something like that.
Yeah, so she's used to it. What about Dean Richards?
Dean, he seems always the same. Like, he is Mr. Even. You know, walking down the hall.
Zippity-doo-dah.
Yeah. Always happy.
Right, always happy. And so there you go. That's your morning show staff in the cold.
How about at your place? Everyone happy?
No. But that, I mean, that's wet, good weather or bad.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you something. The guy that would really surprise you is Enid.
Yeah.
You know, because Dave seems like a swell guy.
Yeah, happy, cheery, happy-go-lucky.
Boy, he loves to throw stuff at me.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I feel I got a flinch. I got a flinch because of it.
Right.
You know, you see me, I get a little snappy, a little flinchy.
I'm just trying to test your reflexes.
Yeah, I don't know. Just control yourself. Maybe go outside, cool off a little bit. And you talk about positive with Robin.
Let me
tell you something. Mary Vandeveld. Oh, man. Bright, shiny disposition.
Isn't
right,
that
Mary?
Nice?
Yes, I am.
See?
Always good morning, positive. Everyone.
You can feel that all the way through these earphones.
Yes, that's not what you're feeling. All right, well, listen, I know you got to go pet a panda or something. I don't know what's happening over there at Channel 9.
You're petting pandas and stuff like that. Hey, just you wouldn't mind, I'm getting a little concerned. I feel like my ears keep getting bigger and bigger, and I know that's the one thing that keeps growing on, you know, and I keep pretty close track, but keep me in your prayers because I've noticed they're up an eighth of an inch already just in 2016.
Listen, can I tell you something?
Yeah.
And everybody thinks I'm nuts.
Right.
The big toe on my right foot.
Yep.
The one next to it. What is that? My index toe?
Yeah, your flipping toe.
my flippy off toe is growing.
Is it really?
Yes.
You know what that means? That is great news. Congratulations to you.
I don't know what it means.
Bigger socks.
I am not making that up. The toe next to my big toe on my right foot is growing, and it's uncomfortable
in
my shoes.
I think it must be something we're drinking, because between your toe and my ears, it's nice men of our age still getting bigger in places.
We can still get stuff to grow.
Yeah. How about that? Take that, you 25-year-old little wussy men.
That's right.
Eat
it.
Tight clothes.
Yeah, and your great
boots,
shape and your attention
your hair,
from women.
Stick it until you can start getting your ears to grow bigger and that second toe to get longer. Just screw you.
You got nothing.
You got nothing is right. Boom. It's Monday.
All right. Happy Monday, buddy.
All right. I got to get going.
Well, I know you do.
I love you.
Well, I love you back. Bye-bye. See you at the apartment. Yeah, okay. Bye-bye. Oh, that's uncomfortable. It's 6:18. Something very, very, very wrong with him.
And you? What's with the toe situation?
I do. My big...
Well, maybe your other toes just are shrinking.
What's that toe called? Is that my index toe?
Your second toe.
What's the toe next to your big toe called?
Your pointer toe.
Pointer toe?
Because this is your pointer finger. This is the swear finger.
Wasn't this the index finger?
This is the ring finger.
So that's my index toe.
Yes.
Toes don't have names.
You can call it your pointer
my
toe.
My middle toe on that foot would be my flipping toe.
That'd be your flip-off toe.
Maybe you have a hammer toe.
What's a hammer toe?
Well, that's when that would make it smaller. They start to bend down.
No.
And then they kind of look like claws.
No, I don't have that. No. My toe's going to turn into some sort
of kinda nasty.
Superhero figure or villain, I should
hammer
say.
Hammer toes.
I don't know, but I definitely got a freaky foot situation going on. We'll take pictures of it and put it up online later. No, we won't.
It's very satisfying to win, to beat the Steelers in a playoff game. Those guys over there are battle-tested. They've been in a lot of big games. You got Ben, gutsy effort by him tonight. They're playing with some injuries, and you knew you were going to get a great effort by them.
Well, I'm glad the Broncos won, because Ben Roethlisberger should have been in jail for assaulting women, or at least married to Gwen Stefani. I think they'd be a cute couple. But, Peyton Manning looked awful. It's just one of the NFL stories from the weekend. Adam Hoge joins us. And, Adam, you write entertaining NFL material all the time. Where would I find that?
That would be at WGNRadio.com/Bears, Steve.
It's good stuff. People ought to read that. Even if you hate football, you ought to read it. You'll learn something. You'll be smarter. You'll sound better at work.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that.
There you go. All right. So Peyton Manning throws like a girl. What's going on there?
I think it's pretty clear that he is at the end of his career here. But I also think it was still the right move to go back to him.
Wasn't the other guy hurt, Osweiler?
Yeah. And that made the decision a little bit easier. But, Brock Osweiler still was, even though he beat the Bears, he was a little he was shaky to me. And to go into a playoffs with a decision between one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time and a guy who's still young and probably not ready for this moment, I think it's the right call, but I didn't really see anything out of Peyton yesterday that tells me, all the struggles we saw earlier in the year were, anything has changed. He's still obviously not 100%. I think he's kind of struggling through the end of his career here, but he really wants to get one more Super Bowl, and that's fair. You can understand it because he's also one of the most competitive people in football. And, I think there are a lot of people out there that would like to see Peyton Manning get one more Super Bowl.
Oh, I'd love to see him win it. But, Dave, Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady in a Super Bowl, that's pretty entertaining. Then, of course, you've got the undercard story of Tom Brady getting the trophy from the guy who wanted to suspend him and all that drama. I mean, there's a lot going on there. But, you got to root for Arizona on some level, don't you? After that weekend?
To get there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they've been
get
a great story
one.
All year. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just one thing on Manning is how many balls were dropped on him yesterday. I mean, that's one thing. And when they needed a drive in the fourth quarter, granted, it wasn't anything spectacular. It was a very methodical drive. He got it done. So,
well, that's the stuff between the ears, right, Adam? That's why he's out there, the experience. And, boy, he hands it off like the Dickens. He handed it off like nobody's business.
Give it to C.J. Anderson.
But that you're right. That, I mean, that's it. You know he's going to be under control in the situation. And that's not to say he's not going to throw an interception. I mean, because he hasn't been playing great when he's been out there this year. But you still feel good about him being in control of everything. And so that's why I think it's the right call to have him out there. And but, yeah, it'll be interesting. Fun game next week. I think both of these games next week, getting Carolina too, and Arizona, maybe they're not the biggest markets and the teams that you're used to seeing there, but both of those teams have been playing extremely well this year. I think they are clearly the two best teams in the NFC one this week, although the Packers certainly gave the Cardinals a run for their money. I think it'll be a great game on the NFC side next week, too.
Well, there's some degenerate gamblers listening now. We're trying to get their action together for next weekend. So let's run through a couple things that happened this weekend. Carolina comes out. They scored 31 points in 21 minutes. They look unbelievable. And then they go out for pizza. And if Pete Carroll doesn't have his head up his cheating tuchus and he takes the 3 points in the second quarter, the outcome of that game could be completely different because it gives him different options. Wait, let's go to Dave on this.
Did you hear, I don't know if you heard this in the sports at 6 o'clock, Cam Newton's comment after
no.
the game?
What did he say?
The first half to second half?
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, we'll do it this way here. Here it is.
You know, we need a little bit more of that in the second half. There's a lot of guys, you know, playing with their butts tight, coaches with their butts tight. Hell, at one point, fans and myself was butt tight too. But, yeah, you know, you just have to find ways to, you know, get your groove back going.
All right, so their butts are tight and their groove is gone.
Exactly.
Kevin, please save that piece of tape. I have a feeling we'll be needing it again.
Absolutely.
So what happened with Carolina just being so conservative in the second half?
Well, you know, it's funny Cam brings that up. I had an old coworker named Herb Lawrence who used to call that TBS, tight booty syndrome.
Yeah.
And it's a thing, I think.
It's a legitimate medical condition.
Yeah, it is. I think it's been diagnosed, and you could probably diagnose the Panthers with it yesterday. I think, look, Seattle's a good team, too. I mean, they're but I don't think they're at the level Carolina was, and obviously Carolina coming off a week, they had a week to sit there and watch everything, and boy, did they come out hot, especially that defense, which is a fun defense to watch, with Ron Rivera's Panthers, and the way they came out, I think it kind of shell-shocked Seattle a little bit, and then all of a sudden you're up 31-0, and I think it's only human nature to coast a little bit from that point. But you do that against a good team in the playoffs, they're going to start chipping away and get back in the game. So I think that's what happened. I think it's going to be very hard for either team next week when you're playing the Cardinals, Panthers, Cardinals, two very good teams to have. I don't think anyone's going up 31-0.
Pete Carroll.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I get it. Pete Carroll doesn't kick the field goal in the second quarter. Why?
Well, I mean, I think he's.
I mean, it's fourth and five. It's not fourth and 5 inches. It's fourth and five.
Yeah, no, I mean, it certainly when it's all over, it looks like, hey, yeah, you'd like to have those 3 points. But he's probably thinking he needs a lot more than 3 points at that point.
I would make the observation that the last two coaching decisions by Pete Carroll, calling the play at the end of the Super Bowl last year being the bigger of the two and not taking that field goal yesterday are fireable offenses if he hadn't had the record he'd had over the last 3 or 4 years.
True, and, you know, this is the NFL, and it's funny when you get used to success and then you fall short, that's when fan bases start to get angry, and if there's moments like that in the playoffs, and I'm sure there are people in Seattle today calling for Pete Carroll's job, which, of course, would be pretty stupid in my opinion, considering what he did to that franchise as soon as he got there and turned around, they won a Super Bowl.
Andy Reid, really good guy, no arguing his success as a coach. Does he understand what timeouts are?
Oh, my God, because, that was...
Because he had three of them, and he had plenty of time to call all three and actually play defense and get the ball back instead of trying an onside kick. What the hell happened there?
I don't know. And this seems to be an epidemic across the league. Really, I mean, you watch games, and it seems like almost every single game the clock is being mismanaged. if it's close at all, and not just in the fourth quarter, but also in the second quarter. And I think there's a lot of Bears fans here in Chicago that would say the same thing about John Fox at a lot of times this season. I think if there's one weakness to the job that John Fox did this year, it was probably his clock management. I couldn't believe it the way Andy Reid was just letting the clock wind down when you have three timeouts, you need two scores. That was crazy. And I want to give Mike Tomlin some credit, even though the game was pretty much over yesterday. He had the foresight to kick the field goal on second down after they spiked it. It was a 47-yard field goal, but he realized, I think there was only, 16 seconds left in the game or something like that. If they had run another play, they would have had no chance of winning. So that was one of the rare points where I think a coach actually made the right call in managing the clock, but it seems like that's never happened. I can't believe it because all these teams have analytics guys at this point. You would think that there would be an easy chart they could draw up when, hey, here's what you should do when there's this much time and these many timeouts.
Like go for two or go for one. They got a chart for that.
Exactly.
It's crazy. If a fat guy in a jersey that doesn't fit over his belly is better at clock managing on his couch covered in dip and chips, you got troubles. So that was a bizarre moment. All right, we'll get you back later in the week to do your predictions, but... I'll be honest with you. I like Carolina, New England. That's my early call, Carolina, New England.
Yeah, I think it's hard to go against the Patriots, and I'm probably leaning towards Carolina early in the week, too. Either way, though, I'm really happy we got these four teams.
It's going to be a good Super Bowl.
It's going to be fun next week.
I say let all four of them play.
That'd be interesting.
Might as well. It's the 50th anniversary that... by the way, those are the favorites early.
Carolina,
New England.
Okay, good. Yep. That's for the gamblers. Adam, thanks for waking up, man.
No problem. Thanks,
at Dad. Adam Hoag.
He's always up.
H-O-G-E.
He wasn't sleeping.
He's got a toddler. Of course he's up.
Of course he's up.
Back with the big story next. 720 WGN.
Woke up after midnight. Both my neck and arms were sore.
Admit it. You sing this in your car.
On my upper lip, there's a growth I've never seen before. And I wish that there was someone I could call.
A couple of nurses walked in on Dr. Most. He was singing this to himself.
WGN Hotline.
Into his stethoscope.
I have edema on my thigh. Pink stuff in my eye and I need you now.
I said, what are you doing, man? He goes... that just sounds cool.
I've got a stomach pain that's low. Fungus on my toe and I need you now.
Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, Centra DuPage Hospital. Northwestern Medicine, by the way, impact every day. Doc, I picked a terrible day to take the rickshaw to work today. I mean, it was really a bad idea.
Don't you feel sorry for the kids who have the day off today, too?
Oh, what a shame. You know, this is the kind of weather that'll keep the kids inside on their computers.
Feel sorry more for the parents.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. There's a commercial running out. I don't even know what the product is, but the end of the commercial is you hear a report on the radio that school's canceled, and the mother reaches for a bottle of wine as she's checking out.
And the problem with that is?
No, it's an observation of life. Remember Aunt John says when she worked here, she called it mommy juice?
Mommy juice, yeah. Which is a great word for it.
All right, Doc, it's super cold. Let's go through it. Difference between hypothermia and frostbite, and what the hell are we doing outside anyway?
Yeah, that is the big thing, obviously, for today and tomorrow and yesterday. So it is. This is all about prevention, and then if you don't prevent the frostbite from happening, what you guys can do to treat it and to make sure that you're treating yourself safely. So it's good. It's something we should go over once a year, twice a year, and it's kind of important that we're doing it today.
All right, so do you know what hypothermia is? Because I don't know what hypothermia is. I just know I'm cold.
Yeah, so hypothermia is a medical emergency, and people use hypothermia a lot. Say, oh, it's hypothermia. It's not true, but and if it does get to that point, it's very serious. That's when your entire core body temperature gets down to below 95 degrees. This is that individual who slips and falls outside and can't get up, or is outside for a long period of time and really is not prepared for it. The individual who's stuck in a car and runs out of gas, those are the people where their entire core temperature, because the body can't maintain that heat, gets down to below 95. Medical emergency, someone that needs to be seen immediately. We have deaths due to hypothermia. What's probably going to be more common today, though, is going to be more cases of frostbite.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yesterday, Doc, I was out covering the opening of an ice rink in Wicker Park, believe it or not. So Steve's laughing
angered,
at me.
Have you angered someone at Channel 9? How'd you get that assignment?
Yeah. It was actually kind of a fun assignment, having to be out in the cold, but I layered up. I had four layers on the top, two layers on the bottom, two pairs of socks, and I brought literally two pairs of gloves. But where I really felt it at the end of the day was in my lungs.
Yeah. Well, and a couple of things there that I would change. One is I wouldn't wear gloves. I would wear mittens. You know, gloves are not great for keeping your hands warm, and our fingers are one of the areas that we're the most concerned about getting frostbite. So you'd rather wear mittens where you can keep your fingers together and close so they warm each other up. You can make a fist, which allows it to warm. And what I'm telling people now, like for you yesterday, I would have said wear mittens and get a couple of those disposable hand warmers that you can put inside the mitten. They stay warm for hours, and they will keep your digits and your hand warm, which is very important today.
Do you have to call them mittens?
I thought you were going to say digits.
Yeah, digits.
I mean, mittens. I mean, you know.
I actually have one of those in my glove compartment. I forget to bring it.
I'm 54. Yeah.
Little heating pads.
I can't wear mittens. Can't you call them man mittens or something? No, that doesn't even work.
Mattens.
Mattens. Mantons.
There you go.
You know, FootJoy makes some cool ones, and Titleist makes some
I have those.
Ones.
It's perfectly acceptable on the golf course.
Yep.
All right, so we know what hypothermia is. We know what frostbite is. But if I remember my lessons from Dr. Most correctly, when we come back, what to do if you are suffering from any of these symptoms, even if it's the tingly, itchy fingers, because you walk inside, you crank the water, you know, up to super hot, you're in trouble.
Hot bath, right?
You rub them really fast together, you're in trouble. Remember when my hand fell off?
That was horrible.
I came from the cold and I was rubbing it together. My hand just broke off.
It was awful.
It's like a Daffy Duck thing. It just crumbled on the floor. Stand by, Doc. More with Doc in a second. Again, Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Impact every day. Mary's here with your traffic trouble spots. What's happening? All right, 6:52, back to Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day. All right, so we've got the frostbite symptoms. Obviously, it's a medical emergency, as you said, if you have hypothermia. But you got the frostbite symptoms. What's the wrong thing to do?
Yeah, so let's just go over the symptoms again real quick. So, you know, you get some tingling sensation in the skin. You know, like I said, it's usually the fingers, exposed skin, ears, tip of the nose. And you're going to get this kind of tingling sensation, burning sensation. The skin will often get very red initially, and then it'll get to kind of a waxy color and get hard, and you kind of either lose sensation or you can have a lot of discomfort. That's when you know we're a little bit more serious here. So probably the big thing is, like you said, when you walk in, anytime we walk in from outside in the cold, what do? We rub our hands together and say, boy, is it cold out, right? That's the absolute worst thing you can do when you have frostbite.
And why is that?
Well, because the skin itself, the cells in the skin have water in them, and they're actually frozen. So when you're doing that, you're doing damage to the skin, you're doing damage to the cells, you're doing damage to the nerves, and you're doing damage to the blood vessels. All those things you don't want to do. You want to warm these back up so that that ice melts instead of damaging the cells and letting the ice melt now outside of the cell.
So is this what you were feeling yesterday?
Oh, I was freezing I wasn't wearing mittens. I was wearing gloves, Doc. So that could be a problem. But yeah, I definitely felt it in my fingers and my toes.
And you don't want to come in and run hot water. If you're going to run warm water, you want somebody who's already been inside to test it, right?
Correct, because you're numb. You can't tell how hot that water is. So you don't want to turn the water on to hot and then actually burn skin that's already very vulnerable. Same thing is why we don't want you to use an oven or a fireplace. You can't tell how warm that is. So you get somebody to turn on the water, make sure it's warm but not hot, and then just gently let the water run over the digits or run over the fingers until they come back to normal. You will start to get discomfort. So sometimes even taking an Advil or two prior to you warming this up is going to be helpful, because as they rewarm, you're going to have discomfort.
And as you're outside, I remember walking into church yesterday when it was super cold. You know, the inclination is to not move what's freezing. But, you know, your face feels like it's going to fall off.
Yeah.
But you keep it moving because you're increasing blood flow, right?
Absolutely.
So you look like a mental patient walking in going, rah, rah, rah. You know, but you're moving your face.
Yeah, you want to keep moving. And people that are walking around without hats on today, make sure you hold your hand up and cup those ears every so often, because ears, we don't think about them too often, but they're totally exposed. Air can get all the way around them. And, you know, especially someone like Paul Conrad, you know, his ears are getting bigger. You know, those are the ones that we get concerned can get frostbite quicker.
Yeah. What do you make of my toe growing? I know we've talked about this before, but my toe's getting bigger.
Yeah, you need glasses.
All right, so what happens? It gets cold. Everybody wants to run away to Mexico. Well, unless you're, you know, Sean Penn, then you run away and you try to save the world, because I don't know if you heard, he's a journalist.
Right.
More on that idiot coming up. If you go away to Mexico, you're going to come back with a brand new disease.
Well, you hopefully don't, but you've probably seen in the news, because this is really
I've never heard of this.
Oh, yeah, it's been on national news. It's been in all the journals recently.
Yeah, I don't pay attention to the information. Is it Zika or Zika?
Zika.
Zika virus.
Yep. Yep, so this is a virus that, you know, 1950s was only in Africa, is now unfortunately spread across into South America and up into Mexico. And for most people, it's what I call an inconvenience, kind of similar to the flu. You're going to get muscle aches, you're going to get a rash, you're going to get fever. But the concern we have is that this one is one that can affect fetuses. So the pregnant mother is the one that we really want to make sure does not get exposed to this, because it causes a condition called microcephaly, or at least it can, where the child's head is much smaller and they have severe mental developmental changes.
So in that case, what are we looking for symptom-wise, and what are we looking to prevent?
Yeah, that's the tough part, is, you know, the symptoms are similar to what we expect with almost any other virus. And the bad thing is that it's been so obscure that we don't have any testing for it. Well, we do, but it's not easy testing. It's not a quick test that we can do. And there's no vaccine and there's no treatment. So really the big thing right now is prevention, and prevention mainly, again, for females who are pregnant. So they should really be watching where they're going to travel, or if they're going to travel. With spring break coming up right now, I think you're going to see the CDC come out and make a very strong statement that pregnant females should not be going to Mexico, should not be going to the Caribbean, should not be going to Puerto Rico at this time.
All right, Doc, great information as always. And for people that want to stay healthy, you pay attention to Dr. Most every Monday and all the resources he lays out here and all the great information. We appreciate it. You know that.
You got it.
Northwestern Medicine. Impact every day. You wearing your mittens, Doc?
I did. I actually do have my FootJoy mittens in the car.
Okay.
I like how you guys have to say FootJoy, because that makes them golf mittens
them
as opposed
manly.
To like
exactly.
Sound of Music mittens.
They're not like knit mittens. They're really cool looking.
Yeah.
They're cool. And they're big, and you can slap a friend with them. thanks, Doc. Talk to you later, and let's take a break, come back. What did Sean Penn say on 60 Minutes last night about his El Chapo interview? No, I'm asking. What did he say? Because I watched it, and I have no idea what the hell he was talking about.
He infuriated me.
You know what made more sense? The Lincoln commercials with Matthew McConaughey.
Right.
You know, the one with the bull, where he's talking to the bull. Oh, that's a big bull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The bull's drooling, yeah.
I don't know what the hell Sean Penn's talking about. I'm going to turn my car around, big bull. We'll talk about it coming up in just a few minutes. Right now, a couple minutes before 7 on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
On Martin Luther King Day, which of course means that appropriate federal offices are closed, but as far as the rest of the world being closed in honor of Martin Luther King Day, no, not so much.
Schools.
You can still shop till you drop.
Yeah, it is. Schools closed. Most suburban schools are closed. Check your district.
What about the museums?
Some of the museums actually are open today.
I think they're free, a lot of them.
Some are. Government offices, federal, state, county, city, all closed. Post office is closed. Courts are closed, but of course bond courts always open, and the libraries are closed today too. So if you want to stay inside and read, do it at home.
There's an interesting version of the I Have a Dream speech, which is like the practice version before Martin Luther King Jr. did it at the Capitol at the Lincoln Memorial. We'll play that coming up here in a few minutes. So before we get to that, last night Sean Penn was on 60 Minutes with Charlie Rose trying to explain himself as to why he would engage in an interview with El Chapo. Now, a couple of things came out of that we didn't know. There were two parts to the interview. The first one, where you see the picture of him shaking hands with El Chapo before they obviously went to the disco, based on how El Chapo was dressed.
Right, right.
That was part one. They wanted to do a part two, but El Chapo's people thought the heat was on.
Yeah.
So they sent him questions, and he answered them on videotape.
Uh-huh.
All right. So I'll be Sean Penn. Now, I don't have any notes in front of me.
No notes.
So it's just going from memory from last night.
Okay. So you're Sean Penn.
I'm Sean Penn. You're Charlie Rose. Ask me some of the questions that he was asked.
All right. Were you aware of the risk you were taking when you met for this Rolling Stone interview?
Yes. 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 Yes, I was. And I was willing to take that risk because it felt like if I didn't do something about the drug war and our mishandling of the drug war, I was as guilty as El Chapo was.
Do you think the interview was a success or a failure?
No, it was a failure. It's a failure because the focus is on the wrong thing. People shouldn't be talking about me or talking about the interview. They should be talking about the drug problems. I failed, Charlie. I failed.
So why do the interview?
Well, because humans are humans. Humans are people. People are human people. And since humans are people who are human, he's a human too. I didn't witness any of the murders, any of the drug trafficking. I just wanted to have a conversation. And I wanted to open that conversation about our failure in the drug war, Charlie.
Why didn't you
You're a human, Charlie. You're a human people.
Why didn't you think this interview would make so much noise?
Well, because I just thought it could be me as a journalist. You know, I'm a journalist.
Are you a journalist?
I'm a journalist. You know, people say I'm not a journalist. I'm a journalist, Charlie. You know what? Show me where the journalists get their journalist licenses. Show me that paper because I'm a journalist. I'm Sean Penn, actor, journalist, human people.
Yeah. Do you think we all just go to a license store and pick up the journalist license?
Where's that license store? Because I need to get me one.
You know, when
those.
You go get that, that's
I need
my
to
question,
get me
by
a
the
license
way.
Store.
You know, you get your milk, get your eggs, get your bread, get your journalist license.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
at the license store.
Yeah, that's apparently that's all you have to do.
And how about him saying, well, you know, I was going to, as a journalist, of course, because no journalist does this, he was going to let El Chapo see the interview beforehand. And if he didn't like it, they wouldn't have aired it.
You know, Charlie, as a precondition for the interview, I agreed to send him El Chapo, or as I like to call him, El or Chop. Sometimes I call him Choppy. I was going to send him a copy of the interview, and then if he didn't want it there, it would just go away.
Because
that's what we do as journalists in our pretend journalist world.
So then no harm, no foul?
No, I think the conversation, again, is in the wrong place, and I just wanted this to be a conversation about people who are humans who are having conversations about drugs, which clearly I'm on. Or I wouldn't have done this to begin with.
So people who are humans who are journalists, we're all humans, people, and journalists.
Now tell me, just based on that little exchange, didn't I make more sense than he made last night?
Completely. Completely. And I started watching it. I thought, you know what? I'm going to be open-minded. Maybe he had some poetic reason for doing this. And he made himself look like a bigger ass than I even thought.
Okay, so what we heard in the beginning was that he was researching a role.
He was researching a role.
That appears to be incorrect. I don't think that's the case now.
Yeah.
I think this guy is bored with acting. I think he has been drinking his own Sean Penn Kool-Aid for years. Mm-hmm. He's unbelievably angry about something. He's always been angry. Mm-hmm. He's just angry little Sean Penn.
I think he does it for publicity.
But what to what end? Because it's not about a movie. It's just about him.
Yeah, and how about the question, too, when he was asking, how did you feel when El Chapo really just wanted to get in good with the actress?
Yeah, I missed the answer. What was the answer for that?
He said, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because
he's a human people.
Because he's a journalist. Because he's a person.
Yeah, and the idea, this is the actor ego, because it pissed me off, too, when I heard it. The idea that you can be a journalist because you call it. Hey, I'm a journalist now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a journalist. As opposed to those that would go to school and commit to a certain amount of ethics and responsibility and, like, acting,
mm-hmm.
hone their craft for years before you reach a certain level where you're entitled to go and do an interview and bring back a successful interview. There's a great moment in the interview with Charlie Rose where he's doing the voiceover, and he talked about the Rolling Stone piece, and he called it meandering and nonsensical.
Nonsensical, yeah.
Yeah, it's a hot mess.
So am I an actress?
Well, if you want to be, just say you are.
I'm an actress.
Okay, you're an actress.
Yeah.
You're an Oscar-nominated actress, yeah. Just because you said you were.
Awesome.
He just came across as just the punk that because I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt.
I did, too.
Because here's the thing. Reverend Jackson went and retrieved hostages at times when people couldn't do it. Reverend Jackson has gone to different places and talked to dictators when people wouldn't do it. The Pope, obviously, has access to people that governments can't have access to. There's a role to be played for that. But nobody asked Sean Penn to go and talk to a guy that is responsible for the majority of drug trafficking and the viciousness that's happened right here in Chicago, and literally responsible for the death of thousands. And you can't sit there and go, yeah, I didn't see any of it.
And number one, an escaped convict.
Yeah.
He was on the run.
Yeah.
It's not as though Sean Penn somehow said, I'm going to broker a deal and bring him back for extradition.
I tried to read the piece. I couldn't get through the first half of it. It's 10,000 words. And I tried to read it, and it really is. It's bizarre. You know, Jan Wenner, the guy that runs Rolling Stone, knows how to do great journalism. You know, Matt Taibbi, for instance. Matt Taibbi does great work at Rolling Stone. Our friend Bill Zemi, mm-hmm. used to write great pop culture pieces at Rolling Stone. Sean Penn's not a writer.
No, I agree.
He's not a journalist.
Too. I do like a lot of the Rolling Stone
yeah,
articles.
Yeah, it's just a complete circle J of El Chapo.
And after watching it, I thought there's no doubt in my mind he did this for some sort of weird publicity.
Yeah, but didn't you get the impression he doesn't know why he did it? He did it for himself, but he couldn't answer the question. Why would you sit down with 60 Minutes if you can't even make up the story?
Publicity. Again, to get his name out there. He does talk in circles because you never got a definitive answer from him on anything, but except the fact that he's a journalist.
Almost every talk show appearance by a major actor is to promote a movie or to agree to a profile on themselves. He wanted to promote that he is, in fact, an important journalist.
Yeah. So any hard-hitting news, wow. We'll just, you know, we'll defer to Sean Penn from now on.
And you could just sense Charlie Rose. At some point, Charlie Rose is sitting there going, what the hell am I doing here?
Seriously. I was waiting for him to get up and punch him at some point.
Charlie Rose goes, I get up every morning. I do that morning thing with Oprah's friend Gail. And what's the other girl? Naomi Watts. What's her name?
I don't know. I don't even know the other girl. I know Gail King, but Naomi Campbell.
No, it's not it. But yeah, she's a fine news person, too. I shouldn't just be flip about her name. But anyway, Charlie Rose, you know, works plenty hard. You know, and he's got his cute little PBS show where they don't have enough lighting in the dark room with the oak table. But this Sean Penn thing's a debacle.
Oh, I think it's ridiculous.
And again, if you want to watch it, it's online. But I'm telling you, what Andre and I just recreated for you made just as much sense as a Sean Penn interview did.
Or journalists.
Maybe more.
And actors. And Academy Award nominated now.
Dave, do you want to be something? Because you just have to say you're that thing to be it.
I think
what'd you want to be when you were a little boy? Do you want to be a fireman, a cowboy, a cop?
I wanted to be a sportscaster on the number one morning show in Chicago.
Go Cat, go
Cat. Dave, that's not going to happen. It's 7:20. Let's get to your traffic trouble spots. And Mary's here with that on 7:20 WGN. All right, 7:24 now. And later on, an hour and 20 or so from now, Damon John from Shark Tank will be on. What's he have, a new book? Is that his deal?
Yeah, he's got a new book out.
And if I read the book, I'll be an instant billionaire?
That's right.
I called it. I'm a billionaire.
That's all you got to do.
I kind of like that. I like that show, Shark Tank, don't you?
Yeah, I do like it. But I'm going with the Sean Penn theory of life. You are what you say you are.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So I am I'm a ballet dancer.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm going over to the Joffrey today to get new shoes because I'm a ballet dancer.
I'm a rock star.
You are a rock star, yes, David?
You have to get new ones because your toe is growing.
Because my toe next to my big toe is growing.
Yes.
This is an actual word-for-word excerpt from the Sean Penn interview. To over-demonize any human being is not in our best self-interest. Like it or not, we're married to them. They're of our time. They're affecting us. So like a marriage, you know, you might want a divorce. If we all aim to understand is that this is a very bad person, then let's not understand anything else.
What the hell's going on out here?
It is,
that's word for word.
It's a great analogy with the Matthew McConaughey commercials because you don't know. I mean, the only difference is Matthew McConaughey is nice to look at.
You ever get in a car and you just drive and you're trying to get to the Sean Penn interview and there's a bull in the road and you see the bull and you go, it's Billy, the big bull. And you go, when I get there, Sean Penn's not going to make any sense anyway, so... Billy, you win. I'm going to turn around. Bye, Billy.
See, now that's understandable, though. That's the only thing.
If Lincoln was paying attention last night, they would have sponsored the Sean Penn interview and ran the commercials. And for the first time, people would have said, well, I get it now. I get it. It's 7:26. Today is MLK Day. And as I say often, if you think that your kids understand the legacy of Martin Luther King, or any big historical day, Don't assume that they do. Sit down with them and talk to them. I don't care how old they are. Talk to them about the significance of Dr. King.
We did it with my goddaughter and her brother last night. They don't have school. They're little, 4 and 5. They didn't have school, so we were explaining to them who Dr. King was.
That's cool.
And they were interested.
As a little kid, everything sticks to their brain.
They were interested. It was very
cool. That's very cool. The importance of today and the Martin Luther King celebration is a little bit watered down in the same way that President's Day now represents the two greatest presidents in history, Lincoln and Washington. It's not for, sales. It's not the big MLK Day sale. It's to actually reflect on the good that Martin Luther King did in his short life. I believe he was 38 when he was assassinated. I think that's right. But a life he lived in the Civil Rights March to Washington and the speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, the I Have a Dream speech, maybe the most famous speech of all time, certainly in the group picture, was actually a speech, the end of which, the most famous portion, was a speech he'd given several times before. Soledad O'Brien did a documentary run on CNN about this where she went back and talked to some of the people. And some of the original folks, and Reverend Jackson could speak to this, but some of the original folks that accompanied Dr. King on that day and prior to it were really sick of the speech. They'd heard it over and over again, and they had said, we're just tired of it. And a couple of his inside advisors told him not to do that portion of the speech.
They went into material.
And he went and he ad-libbed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, look, obviously one of the great speakers of all time. You know, he could make a sermon sound like something you absolutely had to listen to as opposed to something you were looking at your watch going, is this over yet? But the interesting thing is somebody along the way found a piece of tape from a high school in North Carolina. And this is 9 months before the famous I Have a Dream speech where he was tweaking it. He was doing the speech and almost like a campaign stump speech. He was out on the civil rights tour and he was generating support for his ideas. And this is the speech before the speech. Listen to the similarities.
So many friends are rocking out. I have a dream tonight. It is a dream rooted deeply in the American dream. I have a dream that one day, down in Sasser County, Georgia, where they burned two churches down a few days ago because Negroes wanted to register and vote, one day right down there, little black boys and little black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and little white girls and walk the streets as brothers and sisters. I have a dream that one day, right here in Rocky Mountain, North Carolina, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will meet at the table of brotherhood, knowing that out of one blood, God made all men to dwell upon the face of earth. I have a dream that one day men all over this nation will recognize that all men were created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. I have a dream tonight.
Yeah.
One day the words of Amos will become real. Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I have a dream tonight. One day every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill shall be made low. Every place will be made straight. The rough places will be made plain. The glory of the Lord will be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. I have a dream tonight. One day men will do unto others as they would have others to do unto them.
And that's the mic drop. That's the mic drop. Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty we're free at last. And he walks off. 250,000 people were on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and along the reflecting pool in Washington. And 60,000 were white. That's a fact that a lot of folks lost. But that back then, what is that? It's a quarter of the crowd. And this is 1964. It's a, you know, a relevant point that I'm sure made a lot of folks there hopeful. And it was the singer Mahalia Jackson who actually said to Dr. King, tell him about the dream. And that's when he decided to do the ad-lib.
It's cool to hear it that way, too.
Pretty good choice.
Yeah,
I know the sound quality was a little rough there, but that literally was in a high school gymnasium.
That's cool.
So it's 7:32. Quick break. Back with a big story next, 720 WGN.
An animal! Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
Brought to you by your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevy dealers. ChevyDriveChicago.com will all assemble at the auto show coming soon. And the Hall of Famer Dan Hampton joins us now. Good morning, Hamp.
Good morning. Hope you guys had a great weekend. And you're exactly right. It's almost time for the auto show, and you know you're in the middle of winter when the temperature forecast starts to sound like the spread on the weekend's games.
I'm giving
-4 and -1.
I'm giving 2. I'm giving 3. And by that, I mean less than 0. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. All right, let's take them in order. Kansas City. This had themselves a fine season. They had a tough draw. They're playing New England. But I've been harping on the Andy Reid timeout situation. I don't know how you leave timeouts on the table. I have a personal pet peeve when coaches don't use the timeouts in the first half. And for him to leave 3 on the table just didn't make any sense. What am I missing?
You know, it's always the great running joke is when your coach, if your team does that in December in the later stages of the season, you can always say, oh, he's saving them up to, you know, for Christmas. But at this point in time, there's no tomorrow. And I agree. Andy Reid, he botched it. And a lot of it has to do with, when you are as a football coach, you're more concerned with the other team's quarterback's ability to operate with, you know, very little time than you are your own, then maybe sometimes you fall into a trap. And I think it's kind of the way it was. They were preoccupied. They weren't concentrating on what they needed to do to be able to control the clock to get, you know, in position to get back in the game.
So maybe they win, maybe they don't. But did it have anything at all to do with the fact that you got a quarterback that doesn't have a strong arm, who's got to work the middle of the field? It would seem like that would make you increase your pace more than slow it down.
Yeah, and see, that was what was so crazy about when, you know, Lovey was the coach here. It was almost, a week-to-week, botch job with the clock, the timeouts, the time management, all those different things. And, you know, it's easy to talk about it, but you got to do it. You've got to do it. And that's what used to drive me crazy about in the preseason. You know, instead of just saying, oh, it's a preseason game, it doesn't matter. That's where you work on it, not only as a quarterback, not only as an offense and receivers, but as a coach, as an offensive coordinator. And it was evident they were not prepared. And they squandered, you know, it wasn't a mighty chance to get back in the game, but, you know, they squandered what opportunities they had.
So you get to Saturday night. And the last time Arizona and Green Bay played in a significant playoff game, it was a gunslinging shootout, 114 to 110, I think it was the final day. Wasn't it three-pointer at the end of the game?
I think something like that, yes.
Saturday night didn't look like it was going to play out that way. But the whole game was nuts. But, Hamp, that last 5 minutes in that overtime was some of the goofiest stuff I've ever seen.
Certainly was. Some quarterbacks can go a whole career and never have a defining Hail Mary moment. And now we Aaron Rodgers had 2 in this game, and, you know, the one on, what was it, back in Thanksgiving. And I'm perplexed. You know, I think Arizona's a really good team, and I haven't decided exactly how I'm going to, look at this game this weekend. But Green Bay obviously came in, and Green Bay was a completely different team than what they had seen 3 weeks before. They'd gotten some offensive linemen back. They were much better prepared on defense, and especially, confusing Carson Palmer and forcing him into mistakes. But you're exactly right. Aaron Rodgers' ability with little or no time left is unbelievable. You know, I wasn't old enough to see some of the things that Fran Tarkington or Roger Staubach did back in the day. I don't remember it, but I'm telling you, this stuff that he's pulling off is pretty amazing. And, you know, I mean, there's a bunch of old defensive philosophies that nobody practices now, and it almost makes it possible for those Hail Marys. But I got to tell you, nobody, I'm sitting there watching it, and I turned to the folks I'm with, and I said, zero chance. Sure enough, they catch it, and they go into overtime.
And the thing that's amazing, Hemp, is that on the touchdown to tie the game, I mean, he's doing everything mechanically that you would tell a quarterback not to do, but he had no choice. Right? I mean, how he got the pass away is the amazing part of it.
Got away, threw off his back foot, threw mm-hmm. across his body, yada, yada, yada. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And well, and Hemp, I've never heard of him. You know, I'm just saying, moving forward beyond this, I'm just telling you, everybody wants to pronounce Green Bay as, okay, they're done, they're over, blah, blah, blah. They get a couple of guys healthy, and especially maybe add a receiver or two, and they're going to be, a nemesis as formidable as they have been over the last 5 years.
There's quarterbacks that are winners, that are just winners, because that whole game was so nuts, including the coin that didn't flip, that we haven't even gotten to Larry Fitzgerald, or the fact that you don't even get the shot at the Hail Mary unless you convert a 4th and 20 yep. from your own 3.
With a 50-yard pass.
Right.
And that's what I said. He had 2 in that one. I mean, the last chance, 4th down, no chance, opportunities. But, let me just say, I understand that, yes, you can't pin this on Aaron Rodgers. You can't blame it on him. But think about last year. They had the big lead in Seattle,
right,
and they let it slip away. The same thing. They had a lead going into the fourth quarter. They let it slip away. So, it's not Aaron Rodgers, but at some point you got to start saying, hey, we as a team, we're not closing. And who can say that, when you lose, it's everybody, not just the defense.
And Larry Fitzgerald, the go-to guy. I'll take him. I'll take him, and I'll take a brother like him.
Well, there's a lot of reasons why, he's like a beacon. He's such a wonderful player, but such a wonderful person off the field. And you hear story after story about how good a guy he is. A week ago we were talking about the street fight in Cincinnati with the players. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald is a completely different type of story. He's exemplary. And how cool was it that he was able to catch that drag and make it down to the 5, but they did the little,
shuttle pass
attempt to let him score. I thought it was just, hey, and we all know we feel Green Bay's pain, but, man, Arizona, what a great way to win that game.
Traffic, and we'll come back, talk about Sunday's action in just a moment with Dan Hampton. Again, sponsored by Chevrolet, your Chicagoland, Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Back to Mary now for traffic trouble spots. It's too cold to drive. Talking to the Hall of Famer, Dan Hampton. And brought to you by your Chicagoland, Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. All right, Hamp, so yesterday you get the early game, and Carolina comes out 31 points in 21 minutes. Terry Bradshaw at halftime's going, it's over, people. Turn your TV off. Go talk to your family.
Well, it wasn't over. And, you got to send, a bouquet to Seattle. They didn't roll up and quit. That was a team that wanted to go to 3 straight Super Bowls. But Got to give Carolina a lot of credit. And this is the reason why when, you know, fans say, what does home field advantage matter? Why does it play such a big part? Well, not only, you know, is it a lot less of a wear and tear factor on your team, but the ones that do have to get on that plane week after week, you know, Seattle, they had been on the road 3 out of the last 4 weeks, you know, of the actual playing season. And they weren't ready to go, you know, coming from the West Coast to the East Coast, all those things you hear about. Well, you know, a little bit of mental fatigue, a little bit of this, a little means a lot, and they were not ready to go. And the opening play where the running back, Jonathan, busted up there for, what, 80 yards, and then they score, and then the next possession, you know, the usually very efficient Russell Wilson throws a, what, 8-yard pick six. Those two plays, 14 points, you know, it was a situation that it just busted it open, where even though they had a great comeback, 24 points is a hell of an effort, it wasn't enough because of what they had given up so cheaply.
You know, I think that they were kind of playing not to lose in the second half. Ron Rivera all but admitted it, that they went into kind of protection mode there, and they lost their aggressiveness, and all of a sudden Seattle's coming back. But I don't know about you, Hamp, and granted, it was a big lead they had to overcome. I never really had the feeling that the Seahawks were going to be able to come back and win that game. It seemed like Carolina, if they needed to, could crank it back up.
Well, and, you know, to their credit, they didn't need to. Their right. defense was able to do enough to keep it from getting, you know, in that position. But that's the one thing that really kind of shocked me, was that, and Mike Shula is the offensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers. Yeah, they got some real big plays early, and it put them in a position where they could go ahead and just kind of run the table with their offense. They did the read option. They, you know, Cam was able to get the ball out to some of his receivers. Greg Olsen was a factor. But you know, it's going to be interesting in this matchup coming this Sunday with Arizona. Arizona, they've been at home. They've been sitting there. They haven't got on an airplane in a while. So it'll be interesting to see if that offense is going to be able to be productive enough to keep the other team's offense off the field, meaning Carson Palmer. Palmer had his clunker. Now he's due for a good game. So this is going to be one heck of a matchup.
By the way, a weird little historical note on this, that I don't know if this occurred to you, that this is the first time that two Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks have ever faced each other in the postseason.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, isn't
How
that
weird
amazing?
Is that?
Yeah.
Vinny Testaverde never played.
Well, never played another. Yeah, he never faced another Heisman-winning quarterback.
Oh, Vinny, where are you now?
Oh, no kidding.
And I was thinking about you when I was watching the Denver-Pittsburgh game, because what would make Hamp lick his chops more than a quarterback with an injured wing who doesn't have arm strength anymore, and he's just going to have him for lunch and make sure that you're going to get a pick six going the other way or some kind of trouble? Peyton Manning. If it's not for what's between his ears, he doesn't belong on a field at this point.
You know, old age and treachery means a lot, doesn't it?
Man,
I got to tell you, he was. You know, let's also, you know, make note of the fact that that last drive where they came back and scored the touchdown and took the lead and went for the two and.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than one night should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
All right, 8:16 now. We continue with the Wintrust Community Banks Hour. And Dean Richards, sponsored again today by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Health Care Center. Good morning, Dean. How are you?
You are Mr. Perky today.
I am?
Yeah.
Probably get good sleep on my mattress firm mattress on my MyPillow. You know what that is? That's product placement.
That is product placement.
All right, listen, I'm not going to waste any time here. I want you to go right to the Jacob Tremblay story.
Oh, this is so fantastic.
I love this kid.
Critics' Choice Awards were last night. These are given out by the Broadcast Film Critics Association, of which I am a voting member, by the way. And we have lots of different categories, included among them Best Young Actor and Actress. And, you know, there are many, many nominees. By far the best performance this year was by a then 7-year-old Jacob Tremblay, little boy in this movie Room. Hard movie to watch, but it's a mother who's abducted. She gives birth to and raises her little boy in this literally one room in which she's being held in abduction. But this little boy is so cute in the movie. It's heartbreaking. He's great in the movie. And he wins last night as Best Young Actor. He is now 8 years old, nine years old.
Yeah, a grizzled show business veteran.
Just as cute as can be with his little dimples and a little tuxedo. Goes up on the stage, can't even reach the microphone. They held the microphone, down to his
tilted
level.
Tilted it
so he could speak. And this kid was just so unbelievably cute. This is what he said.
Whoa. This is super cool. This is the best day of my life. I first want to say thank you to all the critics who voted for me. It must be a super hard vote because of all the other great actors in this category. I also want to thank my parents, and I love them very much. And I know where to put this. Right on the shelf right beside my Millennium Falcon.
How absolutely adorable is this kid?
Kid just nailed it, man.
Yeah.
On every level. Now, here's the thing. You know he went backstage and he went, tell the writers to blow it out their butts. I'm not answering any questions.
Where's my cigarettes? Told you I wanted cigarettes if I made it out here.
What a sweet kid.
Yeah. He's couldn't be more adorable. And, you know, everybody in the room, you know, he's, you know, thanking the other other nominees in his category. You know, they're taking shots around the room, and everybody's, you know, just...
just blown away by it.
They're completely blown away by how sweet...
Now, if he wins it this year, he'll come back next year, and he'll go, I can't believe I won!
Right. Yeah, for all of these hosts who say that these awards mean nothing, there you go.
That kid's great. I love that kid.
For something like
that. Give that kid another award. Take a trophy from someone else.
You know, Steve, I don't know if you know that we critics are quite brilliant in our choices.
It must have been a difficult vote of all the terrific actors in the category. That's what my mom told me to say.
His parents sitting there, they looked so proud and, you know, just kind of like shaking their heads. Like he says stuff like this all the time.
Well, here's my question to you, and I'm completely serious when I ask this. Has he seen the movie?
I don't know.
Because if he's seen the movie, his parents should be arrested.
Well, I mean, he was in a lot of scenes that were pretty hard to, you know. I often wonder about that when I see movies where horrible things are happening and kid actors are part of that scene. You know, it's like, you know, what kind of parent would let their child be in a scene like that? But, you know, they have parental guidance. You know, the parents are right there. They're always very careful to, you know, stop and explain. This is just pretend. But, you know, you've seen movies where there's, like, unbelievable language, unbelievable things.
Well, yeah, and I think actually, you know, doing the scenes is potentially less damaging than watching the movie, because when you're watching the movie, it's an extended thing.
It's all in context. All.
Yeah, yeah, and a kid can just let their imagination go. Well, I wouldn't let the kid see that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to thank my parents for showing me this terrible movie for scarring me for life.
Not abandoning me.
Sure glad I have my own room and I can leave it.
I'd like to thank the trust fund that they set up for me so I can get rid of them later on and still be financially independent.
I hope that after this movie's over, I can go back to being a kid, even though mommy says I have to support the family because the daddy's drinking.
What are you doing to yourself to get your voice that high right now, by the way?
There's a lot of pinching going on.
That's what I thought.
And that's why Dave Ennett has to go back to the other side of the room.
Yeah, stop it, Steve.
You'll never be able to unsee that, Dave.
All right, let's go to the taller version of immature, Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer won Best Actress in a Movie. for, guess what, an actual comedy movie that won. Unbelievable. She won not only Best Actress, but they also gave her a Career Achievement Award as her presenter, Judd Apatow. Judd Apatow went a little nutty in his introduction of her, slamming Matt Damon.
It was bizarre.
I missed it. What did he say?
He was slamming Matt Damon because last week at the Golden Globes, The Martian won for Best Comedy, comedy or musical, which is really not a comedy at all. And Judd Apatow he made Matt Damon the butt of all of that when really it wasn't Matt Damon who decided.
What does Matt Damon have to do with what category it's in?
He was in the movie, but Matt Damon had nothing to do with putting it in that category. It was the movie studios and the people trying to win awards. So he was clearly not very bitter that his movie didn't win anything last week. Wasn't his speech, Andre? His speech was like longer than Amy Schumer's.
It was bizarre. I wasn't quite sure. I thought at one point he was going to call Matt Damon up, but it was very bizarre. I'm not a huge Amy Schumer fan anyway, but yeah.
Oh, is Damon there?
Yeah.
Yeah, Damon was there. They get a lot of big stars at this Critics' Choice Awards.
So did they have a two-shot of like Damon as well when he's talking about
it? He was smiling. He was being very extremely gracious while it was all going on. And I can't imagine what must have been going through his mind because, he puts this unbelievable pressure on him when Damon really had nothing to do with it. Said that, the movie Carol was going to be up for comedy, which is, is anything but a comedy. He's making a statement on the poor choices that they put some of these. The movie studios submit their movies into these categories wherever they think they have the best chance of winning.
I remember when the great Kanye West, the great thinker Kanye West, interrupted
great philosopher
Taylor Swift.
Yes.
And took her award. And said he was going to give it to Beyonce or something.
Yep.
I just know I'd love to see multimillionaires whining about the awards they didn't get. It's very attractive.
Right, right. That's what makes that little Jacob Tremblay speech even more wonderful, is that, you got all these hot shots thanking their agents. And
sure glad Judd Apatow's not my dad.
Just a little kid.
It was so pure.
Happy. Yeah, he was just so happy. But Amy Schumer went up there, and she had some funny lines. She was, talking about being what she called a plus size woman, being successful.
That was very funny, that part.
In Hollywood this week. And, she's talking about her physique. She's like pointing at her belly, pointing and saying, if you got one of these, this is what she said.
If you're an actress and you have this area right here, you have to write your own stuff if you want to get it made. Right here. This is where I get really brave, as everyone said, after my Annie Leibovitz photo. That's what you want everyone to say when a naked photo of you goes viral. They want you to say, you want them to say, like, it was so, what a brave photo. You're like, thanks. Wow. Thank you.
That's pretty funny.
She was very funny, and surprisingly naughty, even for basic cable TV.
Yeah.
And did you hear some of that, Andre?
She got bleeped, yep. She got bleeped a couple times.
Some of the things that she said didn't get bleeped. I couldn't believe that it got on the air.
The S word is regular basic cable fare now after 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Really?
I hear it all the time.
She was talking about parts of a person's anatomy that you don't really hear referred to very much on television.
Girl parts or boy parts?
Girl parts. Which she talks about in her act. It's like
I talk about it all the time.
A staple of her. Well, you do all the
not
time.
Not on the air.
Anyway.
Oh, it's just off the air.
It's off the air.
Just a matter of time till it slips with him on.
Exactly right. I was happy Spotlight won, Dean.
Yeah. One best picture of the year.
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio won Best Actor. Brie Larson from the movie Room won Best Actress again.
I'd like to thank Mr. DiCaprio for coming in after the bear ate him.
He just wants to continue the squeezing. He doesn't even want to do this voice anymore. He just wants to continue the squeezing.
I like to, I don't know if you know this about me, Dean. I like to take something that's marginally entertaining and drive it right into the ground.
Right into the ground. I love that about you. If it was funny once, it must be funny 300 or 400 times.
Hey, before I go, did anybody see that kook Sean Penn on 60 Minutes tonight? Wow, that guy's a wingnut. Who's with me?
Yeah, wingnut might not be the best phrase to use just right at this moment.
Yeah, I suppose.
The Big Short won Best Comedy last night. Christian Bale won Best Actor in a Comedy, and Amy Schumer won for Best Actress. And they also gave TV awards last night, and Fargo won the most awards. Mr. Robot. Is it a Netflix show?
I don't even know.
Or USA Network, Mr. Robot.
Never seen it.
I think Steve Alexander watched it. I remember him talking about it on the show.
It cleaned up at the Golden Globes, and it did again last night. And for Best Comedy last night, Masters of None, the Aziz Ansari Netflix series, won for Best Comedy. Jeffrey Tambor won for Best Actor from Transparent. And Rachel Bloom from the show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, that's here on WGN-TV on the CW, for Best Actress in a Comedy. She won at the Golden Globes, and now she won again. It's a really good show. It's a musical comedy that's really dark and weird and really funny, and it's on Monday nights. New episodes beginning next Monday night.
And it didn't get talked about, but the director, possibly the producer, who did the acceptance for the show winning at the Golden Globes, basically did a casting call from his acceptance speech. He goes, if anybody here plays an instrument, wants to be on the show, call me.
Yeah, why not? Free advertising.
Yeah.
Even though it's only A&E.
A&E.
A&E. I just want to say thank you to A&E.
I really wish that Steve would stop trying to do this impression of me because it doesn't sound anything like me. And I know that the listeners are getting really annoyed.
He'll have his people on the phone in about 10 minutes, though. Don't worry.
Yeah, his real voice, by the way, is this guy.
Yes.
Yeah, tell him to stop with a stupid voice.
He's so cute. He's got these little dimples, and he has little... I love seeing little kids in tuxedos, you know?
Yeah, it's a good look.
It's so cute.
It's hard. You know,
it is so cute.
You're never going to see a little boy in a tuxedo where somebody goes, oh, that doesn't fit.
That looks terrible.
Terrible.
This is the best day of my life.
That's right.
Hello. I think he was coached. Is this the cynical side coming out in me?
Hello.
Thank the critics.
Did you see him on the red carpet? Jacob, who are you wearing? Wearing Kohl's Boys Department. Kohl's. My designer.
I told you I want Evian water. This out of here.
Last question. A possible second season of Making a Murderer? A huge hit? What do you mean a possible second
season?
Well,
you know, it's a documentary.
Well, kill somebody else. Well, come on.
The president of content for Netflix says that they've had more conversations with this guy. They've had phone conversations with him, and based on that, they are looking at possibly developing more episodes. Based on that, the guy who's in jail now, life sentence, it's being appealed. But the whole thing upon which this guy, you know, in Manitowoc County, Wisconsin, they could be developing more. How about that? A TV network trying to get blood out of a rock like that.
Yeah. Why don't they do a different crime?
You know, instead of Stephen Avery.
Well, I mentioned making a jaywalker and nobody jumped on it.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right, Dean, thanks for being you.
Thank you very much, Steve.
talk to you later.
Bye.
You guys are strange.
It's kind of a Mickey Mouse voice, isn't it?
You know who he reminded me of?
When he went
up on stage, Haley Joel Osment. Remember the kid from Sixth Sense?
Yeah, that kid's like 45 now.
Yeah. Making infomercials.
Speaking of TV, as we were sort of there, Damon John from Shark Tank, The Power of Broke, What It's Like to Be Broke and How It'll Drive You to Be Great. That's his book. He's coming up here in a few minutes. And before 9 o'clock this morning on this program, we got a Hawks Express to relive another Hawks victory last night. What is that, 11 in a row, Dave?
11 in a row.
They're beyond hot. We'll come back, get your big story next on 720 WGN. Shark Tank. Do you dare walk in? Have Mark Cuban and Mr. Wonderful giggle at you.
You know what? I didn't like
tell you your idea is the dumbest thing they've ever heard.
I wasn't sure how this show was going to play out, but I do like it. I like seeing the ideas.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, and I'm not just saying this because he's on the phone. I like Damon John.
Yeah, I do too.
Because I think Damon John's fair, but he also doesn't play around. He tells you if you got an idea or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we'll find out whether or not he's ever punched Mr. Wonderful Kevin backstage as he joins us now. Good morning. How are you, Damon?
Good morning. I'm great. I think I just heard you say something. Somebody say one below zero over there.
How about two below?
Two below zero. Oh.
Wind chill's 25 below.
Clutch how much pearls. Are you? I've invented something, Damon, called a blankie, and I'd like to have $1 million for 50% of the company.
I'm out. That's the quickest segment I ever had. Thank you.
Damon John from Shark Tank, the power of broke, empty pockets, a tight budget, and a hunger for success can be your greatest competitive advantage. You know, you're there. You've arrived. You've busted your butt. You got it done. For somebody who is really down on their luck, but they know they shouldn't be, that's a tough hill to crawl over. What do you say to them?
That they're busted their butt and that I've arrived, and to tell them the power of broke?
Okay, but what if they can't afford the book? What if I say, may I give them my copy?
Well, you know what? Listen, if you can't afford the book, there's other ways to get this information. I don't want to hide it from anybody, but, you know, yeah, you we're at a time and day and age with social media that you don't need to really go out there and spend a lot of capital. This is the easiest and the best time to get into business. The information is all around us. It's about if you're going to absorb it and really apply it to anything.
Damon, you guys are in a position now. You see, I mean, thousands of ideas in any given year. Do you ever, is the hardest part when you see an idea that you know is not going to go anywhere and trying to break it to that person, hey, your idea that you've worked so hard on really isn't going to do anything?
You know what? I don't think that we have the right to tell them if it's not going to do anything. But if they're operating in a certain way, we have the right to say you're doing something that's probably not going to work because of the way you're operating it. So let's look at this blankie idea that we just heard a little earlier.
You mean the one you shot down after my careful consideration of it?
Yeah, but you know what? Honestly, who am I to shoot it down? Because if you'd have told me in 2008 when we had our biggest recession, nobody was buying anything, you'd have said, I got a blanket. I'm going to put two holes in it. I'm going to call it the Snuggie. Yeah. I just said, get out of here. I'm out.
Yeah, amen to that.
Right? And then $300 million later, I would have been wrong.
Yeah, but at least you weren't wearing one. Again, the book's called The Power of Broke, How Empty Pockets, Tight Budget, A Hunger for Success, and Become Your Greatest Competitive Advantage. You got a bunch of contributors in here who tell their stories.
Yeah, and that's the reason that I decided to go out and talk to the people such as Kevin Blank and Josh Peck and Steve Aoki, because I don't want people thinking this mentality of the power broke is something that I just came up with and, oh, my God, I'm so lucky. I just hit the lotto and I have the silver bullet. I talked to people such as Kevin Blank who, you know, he's doing $4 billion a year right now, and that's
not
a billion
bad.
With a B,
that's
right?
Not bad. Yeah, right. That's okay.
Yeah, but this man, he didn't have money to pay a toll when he was coming home at the brokest moment of his life, and he got a ticket for not having $2 for a toll. That's how broke he was. And he took that and he used it, and now he is going up against Nike, Reebok, and Adidas, and everybody said you could not take him on. And I have 15 other people in the book who were broke. Gigi Butler, she was a maid. She was cleaning people's houses. Now she's doing millions and millions and millions of dollars selling cupcakes. Simple as that.
Yeah, it is simple. And there's a statistic that's out this morning. You know this to be true, Damon. Every time there's a presidential election, and usually the midterms as well, we demonize success. We demonize success. The successful people, the men and women who are successful, they're the bad guys. Look, there's bad guys in every segment. I hate to break it to you. There's bad poor folks, and there's bad middle-class folks, and there's bad rich folks. But demonizing success is never the answer. And there's a statistic that's out this morning which says that 1% of the richest people in the world have more than the other 99% combined. It's a nonsense number. I like a statistic I see in your book a lot better, and it goes to this message. 97% of the entrepreneurs who give up end up being employed by the 3% who didn't quit. I mean, that's everything right there.
100%. And we also are talking about success as in it's only monetary. Success is not money. You know, so we're celebrating today Martin Luther King. He absolutely used the power of broke, and he mobilized an entire country of people of all colors to help overthrow this thought process. He is and was social media before it was created. And success, money just drives you up to your problems in a limousine, right?
Man,
I know some really, really wealthy people that are some really miserable people, Kevin O'Leary. So you got to understand, money is not success.
Andrea.
Damon, all right. So my question is, again, you have all these people coming to you with ideas and stuff. So if someone has this great idea an idea that they think is great and they keep getting shot down, maybe they've been on the show, maybe they've been trying to push it for a long time, at what point would you encourage them to say, you know what, either it's not going to work or try a different angle?
It's always going to be try a different angle. Every time you get shot down, you have to come on a different approach. And you have to find out, first of all, there's a couple of ingredients I put in the book on what you need to do. How are your goals set? Who are the like-minded people around you? Do you have a mentor? Are you taking affordable steps forward? You know, many people don't realize that one of the top reasons why startups go out of business is actually overfunding. They go out and they get loans, or they bring in too much capital, and they think that they can buy their way into success, and they sure. burn through the capital quickly, and then they find out that that didn't create a following. If nobody likes one of your cupcakes, don't go and buy $10,000 worth of it and try to advertise, because you're not going to sell all those cupcakes. They all taste nasty.
Kind of the story of the tech bubble in the 90s.
Exactly.
And you got to love what you do. I know a lot of rich folks, too, and I've never met a truly rich person in all aspects, emotionally and in cash, that didn't love what they did and loved what they wanted to do and was passionate about life. Again, the book's called The Power of Broke, How Empty Pockets, Tight Budget, and a Hunger for Success Become Your Greatest Competitive Advantage. And by the way, congratulations on all the success of Shark Tank. What's your favorite personal story from the show, like somebody that came in and you got involved with them and it's just been love since?
There's so many, but I think the one that recent as one of my biggest successes is Al Bubba Baker's boneless ribs.
Yeah,
I got it all out, right?
Yeah.
Big old Lovell monster who played in the NFL for many years. Al and his daughter, they have these ribs that they're deboned. And Al loves being this beautiful chef, and the ribs are doing really well. And women come up to me all the time and say, thank God you made a boneless rib. Now I don't have to have all that crap in my teeth and my fingers.
Yeah.
And we're doing amazing with it. And, these entrepreneurs become family with these entrepreneurs. So it's such an honor and privilege to be able to invest in somebody else's dream and take the ride with them.
All right. Damon John, star of Shark Tank. I appreciate your time. Congratulations on The Power of Broke. Go out and get 2 copies. You're careless. You lose the first one. Thank you, man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Stay warm.
All right. See you. By the way, I didn't ask Damon to sign it. What do you think Damon would have signed if he had been here?
Steve? I didn't mean what I said about your blankie idea.
But you're out.
I'm out.
But I'm out.
What I said about your blankie.
But I'm still out.
Love, Damon?
Much love.
Much love, Damon.
Damon.
He probably signs it DJ, probably, right? He probably doesn't sign Damon John.
He puts cheers, Damon.
Cheers, Damon. Why cheers? Is he British?
I think a lot of people write cheers. Do you notice that?
I do sometimes.
You write cheers?
No.
Then he realizes, oh, I'm empty-handed.
Dave Bennett doing his own show in his head again. Again, the book's called The Power of Broke. It is 8:49. Mary's back with your traffic. I think I found Kevin's Twitter doppelganger. The Twitter doppelganger is not a name of a band I was in. It's the person most like you on Twitter.
Who is it?
Eddie Lacy from the Green Bay Packers.
Oh.
He's a big boy.
Yeah. Do you know about this, Dave, that Eddie Lacy only tweets about food?
No, I can't say I knew that.
Eddie Lacy's Twitter account. Here are recent tweets. I want a sausage and egg cheese McGriddle.
Oh, so good.
That's the entire tweet, by the way. That's it. Here's one from July. All I keep thinking about is food. Sonic, here I come.
Oh, I've never been to Sonic.
From December. That food, though, .. Hashtag, yes, Lord.
Yes, Lord.
From July. This food got me sleepy. I'm not editing. These are the full tweets.
Like, you know when you get the Chicago Classic from Lou Malnati's, you take a couple slices down right after that? You get sleepy. You want a nap. I can relate, Eddie.
From January. Guess I'll start my day off with some fast food. He's not talking about family. He's not talking about friends. These are his tweets. From July. Made it to the crib. About to get this food and watch Unknown. Also from July, in my apartment, packing my things. Would be so nice if somebody offered to bring me food.
Wait a minute, he's taking food into a crib?
Well, his crib, like his pad.
His crib, that's his apartment.
His crib, oh, yeah. Yeah, like his pad.
Got it,
yeah.
I knew that.
Did you?
Stump the
Because the white meters are going off.
Exactly.
From March, I don't even know what this means. Eddie Lacy in March tweeted, "We'll do moose stuff for food."
Moose stuff.
What does that mean?
Kevin?
I don't even know what that means. He's got all kinds of lingo I don't even know about.
This is like a tease, though, for Kevin.
Is that a sex thing? Moose stuff? What is that?
Whatever it takes.
Isn't there some food show with moose and marmalade or something?
That's the morning show on B96. We're thinking of moose and marmalade.
I thought over the weekend. I knew a guy named channel I was watching.
I knew a guy named Moose once. For real.
How about, Moose Scourin?
Oh,
nickname, right?
Yeah.
From May, I'm about to go get some China food. Does that mean he's going all the way to China?
Chinese food, probably.
He seems like a Mongolian beef type of guy.
But this is like, seriously, this is like a tease for Kevin because he's been so good with giving up such fast food.
These are such great tweets. For those of you who don't understand Twitter, this is what Twitter does best. Twitter just brings out the real deep stuff in a person, like this one from Eddie Lacy in January. Maybe China food. Then I'm coming back to clean this room since I didn't yesterday. Thank you, Eddie. Thanks for filling us in.
He says, been eating gummy bears for the past 30 minutes. I can relate to that, because when you get started on gummy bears, you go all day with those.
Just know, if you can't find Eddie Lacy, he's about to go get some China food.
Is that maybe food you eat on China, on your good China?
That's it. Yeah, you put the food on the China.
He's a brother from a different mother of you, Kevin.
Yeah, he's like one of my new favorite players. I didn't know this about Eddie.
8:56, after 9 o'clock, we're going to talk to Kurt Summers. Kurt coming in?
Yeah, he'll be in studio.
And explain?
What's that?
Who is Kurt?
Kurt Summers is the treasurer of the city of Chicago.
So he's going to bring in a hat, and we're going to have to put money in it?
Something like that. Yeah, everyone's got to chip in to help out.
Okay. It's like when you were in high school and somebody wanted gas money to take you somewhere.
Right.
Don't suggest that because he might actually do that.
I'm going to give Kurt $20 to give to the city.
That would be, that would be helpful.
Yeah.
That would be 1/200th of our property taxes, so that'd be great.
Those aren't bad. If you had property taxes were that cheap, you'd take that deal. Yeah. It's 8:57. We're back after this on 720 WGN. It's coming up on 9 o'clock. News now. One other food thing, Kev. Do you know about Nashville hot chicken?
Nashville hot chicken?
KFC is rolling out something called Nashville hot chicken nationwide today. Available in both tender and on-the-bone varieties, Nashville hot chicken was introduced in Pittsburgh restaurants at the end of 2015. People went crazy for it, so now it's going to be available everywhere. Spicy bird with a savory burn.
Well, remember when we were down there? Everywhere we went, that was the big thing.
Hot chicken.
Everywhere.
Yeah, all over Nashville. Hot chicken. And we went to that chicken joint. What was the name of that chicken joint we went to?
Was it called the chicken joint? I think it was the chicken joint, and we had hot chicken, and it was
delicious. They all had names like that. It was like the chicken joint. Chicken hole in the wall, chicken joint, chicken place that
serves
chicken.
And they all had odd hours. Remember the place that's supposed to be the most popular? I can't remember the name.
It was open for like
2.5 hours.
It was open for 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Lunch was like 11 to 11:20.
We just missed it.
And then they put a sign out that said, don't come in no more.
I walked in the door and they just gave me a dirty look. I'm like, all right, I'm out of here. Sorry.
Did it really say don't come in no more?
No, but
okay.
It's kind of that kind of vibe.
Some of those places are like that. When they run out of food, that's it. You know?
Get out.
That's right.
It's 9 o'clock. Let's news? We going to news? Doing this? Okay. Isn't it great when I sound like I've never been on the air before? Doing the news, Kev? Is that what we're doing? Doing
that is news time, yeah. News top time? Of the hour.
Okay. Want to do the news?
There we go.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
It's 9:10 in the morning. Kurt Summers is here, treasurer for the city of Chicago. Were you just at the MLK Day breakfast?
Yeah, I was at the
How'd
Puss
that
breakfast.
Go?
It was great. Yeah. It was great, yeah. Big room, big crowd.
And people didn't use a cold as an excuse not to show up?
No, not today at least.
Good. Am I right about this? A year and a couple of months? When were you appointed?
December 1st, 2014.
Oh, just over a year.
Yeah, so almost 14 months.
Well, the city's got no money. Did you even get a cake for your anniversary?
No, not even close.
Take it to the vending machine, buy a candy bar or something?
Barely got a pat on the back, you know?
I do have an extra 20 in the wallet for you if you want to take it back to the mayor. Yeah. My little way to help.
I'm looking at my staff when I say that.
Because, as a treasurer, you have to count money. There has to be money to count money,
right,
which is one of the reasons we're talking about all the good things that are happening that get underreported and actually investing in this city that we all love.
Yeah, yeah. It's a tough time to be in a position where your job is to invest the money when we have a lot less than we need.
So when you look at the balance sheet for the city or the imbalance sheet for the city and what you want to do for 2016, what are those meetings like?
Tense. You know, if you think about it, so we manage in the city's portfolio, you know, on any given day, $6 to $7 billion.
Right.
And as you know from sort of the budget discussions, you know, we've been anywhere from $500 million to $1 billion short in making things balance. So the difficult conversations is where's that other money going to come from? I need it to make it balance. And the more of it I have, the more of it I can invest, the more revenue I can generate, right?
Well, we know the state has a ton of uncollected funds. And I don't know if it's like, you know, I sort of equate it with the deadbeat uncle syndrome. If I owe the deadbeat uncle money, maybe I can walk away from it because, you know, all the times I've lent him money to begin with. So if you're a bad credit risk like the state of Illinois has become, maybe some people aren't as inclined to come give you your money. Is the city of Chicago owed a bunch of money as well that we don't know about?
Well, I think the city of Chicago has, you know, significant debt outstanding to it as a collector. And the city pays through the revenue department. That's not through my office, but through the revenue department. They pay millions of dollars a year to collection agencies to try and collect the debt.
But that money coming in would help you.
For sure. And but the question is, I don't know what the efficacy, the quality of that collection is, how good it is. And there was a study that was done maybe a year or so ago that said some of the stuff is decades old. You may never see it, right?
Well, you'd have to walk away from some of it. It's a percentage of it.
For
part
sure.
Of life.
A big thing that we focus on isn't so much the collection, but the funds that we do have. You know, the city is in its highest level of debt in its history. We've raised so much debt from the capital markets, from Wall Street. But we have hundreds of millions of dollars that's sitting there unspent, outstanding, because the raising of the capital has outpaced the actual spend and the projects being done. And so, you know, the question, the real tense conversation comes when I raise and say, hey, there's $300 million sitting in these project accounts. They've been sitting there since Rich Daley was mayor. What are we going to do with that money, and why hasn't it been spent? So those are the real fun conversations.
Kurt, I'm sure you get this question all the time from city taxpayers and residents. We have among the highest property taxes in the nation. We pay the highest for parking, entertainment taxes, parking meters, red light cameras. Where is all that money going?
Sales. You know, let's just keep going, right? The money is going to fund city, county, and state services. So if you think about sales tax, property tax, that goes to all three of those levels of government. The city and the county are actually a smaller portion of than the state is. So we get sticker shock from the big number, and then there's a smaller sliver. But it goes to fund police. It goes to fund fire. It goes to fund people picking up your trash.
To pay the bills.
Yeah, to pay the bills. I mean, we truly do have an operating budget of $7 billion. Mm-hmm.
So
it's got to get paid.
The $300 million, though, because you live in the city.
I do.
You live this every day. The $300 million you were talking about that's sitting there,
yeah. You've
been sitting there since Richie Daley, got to make your hair fall out.
Oh, it drives
me. I don't have any left to fall out. But help us with some basic knowledge here. Who pulls the trigger on that $300 million eventually?
Every individual department. That's the thing.
That's the problem.
The process.
Everybody gets a vote.
Everyone gets a vote. They do it at the time in which they're ready. And it's so decentralized, you can't just force and say, well, we're just going to wipe all that out. This department says, well, wait a second, we haven't gotten to that project yet. This one says it's going to move it over here. It's maddening. And then what's more, you know, there was a story that was done this year that said we spent $75 million in fees to banks last year, higher than almost any place in the country. What the banks require us to do when we borrow money isn't just borrow the money for the projects. Right now we have over $700 million sitting in debt service reserve accounts. So we have to overborrow and pay interest on the overborrowing and pay fees on the overborrowing so the money can sit there just in case something happens.
And those are all administrative fees at $75 million?
Yeah, it's underwriting fees, administrative fees. Paper pushing fees, whatever you want to call them.
Why is it also too? And I'm sure this is more probably a legal question, or maybe for the city council even. But why is it that when so many of these lawsuits are settled, you know, $5 million, whether it's well deserved or not, these many families are given $5 million or settlements. Why does it come out of the taxpayer funds?
Yeah, I mean, some cities actually insure against this. it's not an uncommon practice. So the city can decide whether they set aside money every year, they self-insure, or you can go to Aon or
Lloyd's of London.
Lloyd's does have a product.
Oh, I don't doubt
they
it.
Back what's called civic risk, and they say, look, you go in a police chase, a police car hits someone's property, you can insure against that. Why not? My view is, as a Chicago resident, as a taxpayer, as an advocate for the people of Chicago, someone who works for the people of Chicago, all of these things have to be raised. All of these things have to be questioned. And I think particularly now when, you talk about a settlement, look at the communities that we're talking about here that haven't had any investment in their neighborhoods.
Sure.
Increasingly are subject to regressive taxes. And neighborhoods like the one I grew up in, Bronzeville in Chicago on the
sure.
south side, I'd be mad as hell. And I'd say, look, enough's enough. Money's not being used to support my neighborhood, invest in my neighborhood. And it's certainly not leading to what I believe are fair outcomes for people like me.
Does it come down to the power of the voter? Is that too idealistic? In other words, can I go to my alderman and say, you're not my alderman anymore unless you get your ass in gear on this?
100% yes. You know, most aldermanic races in this city are you have less than 10,000 votes. And a number of them.
Yeah, you got to be engaged.
In the wards. And so they're decided by a couple thousand votes or less. There's power in the vote. There's power in mobilization.
Well, that's a great problem we have with the presidential election, obviously. The far right and the far left are the people that show up for the primaries. In the middle, the people that wait to decide who the president is and complain about who the choices are. You got to get involved in the process that exists, even as broken as it is, so that you get the candidates you want to vote for in the general.
Yeah. If you look at, when we had hotly contested elections in Chicago in the early 80s, voter turnout then was 80%+. This last mayoral election, 40% or less in some in the black community, 35% Hispanic community, around the same. Overall, 40%, half of what it used to be. We are half as engaged at best.
And how come the vehicle stickers are so much, too? And will those ever go back down?
And can you pay for Andreas?
No, absolutely not. I pay for my own.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I used to like the contest that they have, too. I know that became a controversy at one point, too.
Yeah, I think you got to ask Clerk Mendoza about that.
Right, but, I know. But, I used to like the different
stuff. I heard an interesting idea the other day. Someone said, look, we got to do vehicle stickers. Why don't we get rich guys that have boats and planes, get them to have some other, luxury
sticker. Or permit, yeah.
I thought it wasn't a bad idea.
It's not a terrible idea. Yeah. I mean, most of the rich folks I know, and I'm doing fine. I'm not them, but I do okay. I'd be happy to kick in a couple extra bucks.
Yeah.
I got 20 in my wallet. Did I mention that?
Yeah.
I think that would be a good
I'm collecting on the way out.
Yeah, exactly. We'll take a break. I want to talk to you about 77 Proud, because you're kicking that off today, in part to honor Dr. King, but you were mentioning the neighborhoods. There's a roast coming up for Richard Dent at the end of February, and the money's from it, from the Better Boys Foundation and Family Foundation, is specific to Lawndale. And I was talking to a couple of folks from the organization, and they're talking about Lawndale sitting, you look at New Orleans since Katrina.
Yeah.
You can dial back the calendar on Lawndale and go back a decade, 20 years, even farther, and see that economic development just stopped.
Yeah.
You can't have it. I mean, these kids in the neighborhood, if they don't have any opportunity, then the gang looks like a good idea.
Exactly right. I was over in Lawndale yesterday at a church, and we had this conversation, and it was really simple. Looks the same today as it did 30 years ago, and young people who are out there who have maybe young families are saying, I got two choices, right? I can do something that's frowned upon and maybe criminal activity not welcomed, or my kid can starve.
Right.
So
it's a bad day.
Those neither one of those are choices that should be acceptable to anybody here, any of your listeners, any person in Chicago.
And we can talk it to death, or we can do something about it.
That's right.
So 77 Proud. Details in a moment. 921 on 720 WGN. Steve Cochran Show, number 567, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Twitter at Cochran Show and Facebook, Steve Cochran Show, 312-981-7200 for texters and phone calls. And City Treasurer Kurt Summers is here. You know, Kurt, and this goes to the 77 Proud Project. There's nothing worse than the death of hope.
Yeah.
You got to have hope. You got to have hope, and you got to have something to believe in. So here on MLK Day, I think it's a nice way to remind people of what the day is about, to kick it off, that it's not just the sale at Walmart. That 77 Proud's got some foundational meaning to it. So what is it, and what do you want to do?
Yeah, so we're kicking it off this afternoon at Stone Temple Church, which is the church 50 years ago Dr. King spoke at when he was here on the west side of Chicago. It was also, you know, one of the places that in the beginning, in his birthday 48 years ago, when they launched the Poor People's Campaign in the basement, and they said, you know, the last leg of social justice and civil rights here is economic justice, and is about having economic empowerment. And that all starts with hope and belief that that in the American dream, and that you can have an opportunity just like anyone else in the world. So what we're doing today is we're gathering community leaders, faith-based leaders, business leaders, elected officials from around the entire city to launch this campaign called 77 Proud. You know, Chicago has 77 neighborhoods. I started in office my first 77 days. I had a meeting in every one of the 77 neighborhoods. Because, you know, I grew up here, grew up on the South Side, and I realized that early on, no one knows someone's neighborhood better than they know themselves.
Got to talk to the people then.
You got to go there. How you know, sort of pretentious or egotistical or whatever would it be to think you know better than the people who have been there for half a century?
Sure.
So we made it our business to go. It was hard, but to 77 neighborhoods in 77 days.
And I bet you heard over and over again, I need resources. And by the way, resources aren't just money.
No, that's right. I mean, part of it was just, we talked about engagement before the break. Part of it is just, we need to be engaged. We know what's best for our community if you would just listen to us.
Right.
If you could have a seat at the table. So what we learned is that every neighborhood here in Chicago is proud, right? They're proud of their history. They have a unique culture. Royko called it a patchwork quilt, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And my belief is that this 77 Proud campaign that we're starting today is about meeting people where they are, bringing real financial opportunity, economic opportunity, every single neighborhood in this city. So today kicks off a series of events we're going to have around the entire city, where we're coming to your community and we're creating a program unique to your neighborhood, partnering with community-based organizations and saying, here's what we understand the needs are here, and we're here delivering services and bringing you to the table so you can have a different, potentially a different outcome for your life.
And this is stuff, these are programs, this isn't just talk, these are programs that have been thought out, planned out, and are going to be instituted in 11 different areas, right?
That's right. So we broke down the 77 neighborhoods into 11 regions. Each region's going to have an event, and it's going to be everything from financial education to tax assistance, credit building, to job support, resume building,
I mean,
you name it. There isn't a person who can't benefit from being engaged in this way, and if we touch them, whatever their situation is, we're going to be able to help, and we're literally bringing a mountain of resources and putting a ton of support and focus on this.
One of the things I like about it too is it eliminates excuses.
That's right.
Because there's people that go, well, you know, I got the help with my taxes here, but big deal, I don't have a job and I don't know where to go for the job resource piece of this. These are all interconnected.
That's right.
I don't know if anybody's talked about this. Is there a way to give people free CTA as long as they're going from one or the other?
Well, we haven't talked about it. It's an interesting idea. Our hope is that it's sort of at a central enough location to represent half a dozen neighborhoods that they can get close.
I think it's a reward. It's a reward. I go in for the tax planning. You give me a seat. You give me a coupon that says I was there.
Yeah.
I can use it, but I got to use it to go to the next one.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And the other thing that we're doing, you talk about this tax and credit stuff. So you want to come get your taxes done for free. Great. First of all, today what happens is, most folks who are sort of working class folks, you might go to a local tax preparer. You might want that money sooner rather than later. So let's say you can get a $2,000-$4,000 return. You know, you're going to be out 20-30% of that just in that process
sure.
of paying it. And a lot of folks, you know, they get that short windfall. There's no plan for what to do with that money. you know, maybe you're paying off some holiday bills. Maybe you got something you've had your eye on. It's not being put to work for you or for your household or for your kids. So we're bringing that full package to you and saying, hey, not only are we going to do this, we're also going to help you with your credit. We're also going to, we got three banks here who are going to help you put that money to work if you have anything you want to save
for.
I think it's great, too, because a lot of people don't know that these free services are available.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're doubling the capacity of them. Last year, there were 20,000 families we helped get tax assistance in Chicago. We're doubling the number of locations this year, and we're doing this outreach. So we expect it to reach 40 to 50,000 families, and it's going to be tens of millions of dollars of value that otherwise just leaves our economy and doesn't get reinvested.
Yeah, and that drain we can't take.
That's right.
So
I do have an interest here.
Yes, exactly. It's great to have you in, and I'm happy to help you big mouth this for as long as it goes. But let's keep this conversation going too on things. Last question,
sure,
because I'm late and I'll let you go. The interconnectivity of the state's budget problem with what you have to do in the treasurer's office is what?
It's vital. Let me tell you why. Specifically, as it relates to schools, the schools can't operate without the state. They are state funded, state supported, and the funding formula is entirely determined by the state. City of Chicago's credit, I'm an investor, right? The City of Chicago's credit rating, no matter what we do in every other area of the city, continues to be dragged down by the situation with the schools.
Right.
Will not matter. So whether we're talking about teacher pensions, we're talking about fair funding, doesn't matter. There's a direct tie. So every person, if you say, well, that state stuff has nothing to do with me, I live in the city, it has everything to do with you. It has everything to do with, you know, a good quality school for your kid, everything to do with the cost of everything else that you do. Because the more we get hit by the markets and our credit ratings, the more we have to charge you for it.
Yep.
Right? So pay attention, get involved, get engaged. The state stuff matters.
Definitely get engaged. All right, I'm going to give you $20. Who do I assign this to?
Yeah, Kurt. A. Summers Jr.
The Honorable. Put in the front.
I'm just going to write, good luck, Steve.
Good luck.
You know, this is a felony to deface a $20 bill.
Is that right?
So I don't consider this a felony.
Don't worry, I won't tell anyway.
Okay. Now, spend this well. If I come over to the office and it's framed, I'm going to tell you to take the frame down and spend it on the city. Now, take it to the first stop today. Here's what you do.
Use it there.
Take it to the first stop today. You see a great kid that's in it, give him $20.
I'll tell you what I'll do. At our first event on January 22nd, I'll use this if we don't have, because it's a short-term turnaround to get the CTA program up on January 22nd.
There you go. Pay for somebody's.
We'll pay for some CTA rides. How about
that?
I believe I've solved all the city's problems.
I believe you have, yeah.
Great seeing you.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
And thanks for playing hurt. I know you're not feeling 100%. I appreciate you coming over.
I appreciate it.
All right. And happy MLK, Dr. King Day, MLK Day today to everybody. And again, what did we say earlier? We say this again and again. Sit down with your kids. Talk to them about Dr. King. Don't assume the schools did it.
Yeah.
Explain the significance of the day. Let's get to the big story. We'll do the break first. Break, then the big story next on 720 WGN.
To the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio in downtown Chicago.
720 WGN.
Hey! 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 9:42. Bill and Wendy coming up at 10. Did you see, you wrapped up with Sean Penn on 60 Minutes last night and all the great football this weekend. But there was a major television happening this week and this weekend that kind of flew under the radar.
Which was?
Sesame Street has moved to HBO. Do you know this?
No, I did not.
Saturday mornings on HBO, Sesame Street is now on HBO.
Oh, I used to love Sesame Street.
So now you think of all the classic Sesame Street characters. Give me a few of your favorites.
A Big Bird, Bert and Ernie, Oscar the Grouch. The Count.
Sure.
They're all there, all the regular.
They're all there. But it's HBO. So since it's HBO, you know, you got to subscribe, obviously.
Yeah.
But, they had to change it a little bit because it's not basic cable. It's HBO. Well, let me play a couple clips. This is from Saturday's premiere episode. This is from Duck, Duck, Die.
Stay with me. McClane. Stay with me.
Dad.
On your tombstone, it should read...
La 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 la, la 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 la, Elmo's world.
Elmo, yippee-ki-yay, mother f***.
Actually, I reversed those. That was actually from Die Hard with Miss Piggy. Duck, Duck, Die is a different episode. Do you have the clip from Duck, Duck, Die?
Yeah, I got it here.
All right, let me hear Duck, Duck, Die.
Robert Ducky, you're my very best friend. It's true.
I got one more.
Oh, Rubber Ducky, you're the one. Make bath time lots of fun.
Sweet.
It's very sweet, yeah.
Ducky, I'm awfully fond of you. Rodeo, Rubber Ducky, joy of joy.
It's a little different.
Sparta!
Oh.
Rubber Ducky, you're my very best friend, it's true.
I think you can see that it's HBO. It changes it just a little bit. They're subtle. They're subtle changes, but they're definitely in there. You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Let me give you one from week three. This is Elmo Hates Snakes. Can you give me a little bit of Elmo Hates Snakes?
Oh, I'm Sammy the Snake, and I look like the letter S.
Enough is enough! I have had it with these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking play.
Oh, yes.
So you can see
what?
That the HBO version of Sesame Street is probably not just for children anymore.
It's not very sanitized.
Yeah, you're ruining my childhood memories.
No, it's not your memories. This is the new Sesame Street.
I don't
Street.
Like it.
Well, okay.
It's scary.
You say that now. Where do you see the softcore porn that Big Bird's doing?
They'll make a guest appearance on The Affair.
That's exactly
our
right.
Homeland.
Yeah. I'm just going to listen to this bump, if you don't mind. Bill and Wendy, in just a moment, we're all members of the, it's a combination union now. It's the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA. So, therefore, they throw a bunch of screeners at us this time of year, ahead of the SAG Awards vote coming up in a couple of weeks. And I saw the Steve Jobs movie this weekend.
Oh, I still have to see that. What'd you think?
Great performances. He's a miserable character, you know, and it seems to be factually true. Just a really unpleasant individual.
I have to see that
one. And there's an overarching message, obviously, in all of it. You can be one of the wealthiest people on the planet. You don't have to be a dick.
Right.
And that seems to be the message. So that's out there.
So no need to see it.
No, I'd watch it.
Okay.
I'd watch it. Dave, you finally saw Spotlight, right?
Saw Spotlight, yes. Really,
it's great
really
movie.
Great
Wasn't
movie.
Wasn't it good?
Oh, yes. I saw it too.
Love Spotlight.
Tremendous.
Yeah, it was
right?
Awesome. Really good.
What are you guys doing today?
Do you know who Stephen Tobolowsky is?
Yeah, he's a famous character actor.
He's a character actor who everybody sees and goes, why do I know that guy?
He's going to be that on. Guy. He is that guy.
He will be that guy with us.
He is one of the funnier people you'll ever see. And I saw him this weekend in one of my favorite movies, a movie called Sneakers. From, is that right, Sneakers? I think it was Sneakers.
I don't know what that
Robert
is.
Robert Redford.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Dan Aykroyd's in
there. Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
And Tobolowsky plays a very small part, but plays the nerdy boyfriend of one of the, or a blind date of one of the main characters.
Right.
That's a stretch for him.
Yeah. Nerdy. Yeah.
He's
and he
great.
Kills it. It is Sneakers, isn't it?
Why
am I doubting myself?
It is called Sneakers.
Robert
yeah.
Redford movie, Sneakers.
Yeah.
Very funny. Well, funny and good.
It's a caper film.
It is a caper film.
They've got capers
in it. Was
there
great broccolini in it?
Yeah, he's got a small role
he
in it.
He does.
It was called Sneakers.
Yeah. You should say it. It's a good movie.
Sidney Poitier is in it,
too. Sidney Poitier. Yes.
Yep.
His real name, do you know this, is Stan
Porter?
Just Stan? No last name?
You know, he loves Stan? A chicken
He bailed
sandwich.
On his own joke. That's sad.
Well, I saw a lifeboat going over the side on your own joke.
It's after 10. Technically, I'm out. All right, see you tomorrow.